Hello and welcome to the Brentas Foundation podcast, where we throw light on some of the African continent's biggest and most pressing issues and leverage best practice, not just on what to do, but how to do it. I'm your host, Marino Ongoklo, and it's a pleasure to share in this moment with you. If you're new here, welcome. It's nice to have you here. If you're a regular, hey, how's it going? So this is the podcast where I share a lot of the super interesting conversations I have with really cool people. I'm a firm believer in sharing ideas that shape and challenge the world as we know it. My hope is that these conversations, where you get to be a fly on the wall, start further and deeper conversations wherever you are and lead to the exploring of actions and ideas that actually work and make a difference. So without further ado, let's get straight into it. Again, I'm Marie Noel and you're listening to the Brentas Foundation podcast. Russia's war in Ukraine is one that has caused major disruption to the lives and well-being of many Ukrainians and that of many in the world at large. While war is not the preferred option, this Eastern European country, if I may call it that, found itself having to take up arms to defend the integrity of its territory against the action of an unwavering aggressor. Much has been said about the Ukrainian war effort, and a lot of it has been about its bravery, its confidence, courage, and decisiveness. President Zelensky has led his country with incredible amounts of courage and enviable leadership. And that's not all by happenstance. The Ukrainian war machinery is a product of intentional communication principles and the use of compelling messages and marketing skills across multiple platforms, including advertising, multimedia, and public relations campaigns. We've seen this emerge when, on the very first day of full-scale Russian invasion, 24th February, all TV channels were merged into a joint information marathon. We've seen concerted efforts to inform about Russian combat losses, a tactic which is quite effective or has proved to be effective for morale. And we've also seen over time a different level of relatability to people using humor. Even official government channels have integrated humorous content into their channels. We've seen, for instance, that even the Ukrainian Ministry of Defense has turned to trolling the Russian army, posting and retweeting like memes. This is strategic communication in wartime, and it's the subject of our episode today. It's a different world over here, but I suppose that's what happens when one's world is suddenly upended by a hostile invasion and full-scale war. I had the opportunity to connect with Ms. Alina Frolova. Alina is the deputy chairman for the Center for Defense Strategies and an ex-deputy minister for defense for Ukraine. This chat, ladies and gentlemen, is what I call a masterclass. Have a listen to this chat on strategic communication during wartime. Alina, thank you so much for taking the time to do this with me, especially because it's very impromptu. Welcome to the Brentas Foundation podcast. We are seated here in Kyiv, in Ukraine.
Welcome to Ukraine.
Thank you. All right, so I think I'm going to keep this quite short, but I think the important thing that I would want to know, and I think others would want to know as well, especially given your role, is can you share maybe the top two or three lessons on strategic communication since the start of this war began?
First of all, I should tell you that you need to combine some kind of desire to control with networking. And that should be some kind of balance, because what we played well within all this period, this is the efforts of all the civil society, of all the citizens and the government, which was combined. And you cannot coordinate the communication of 40 million people.
Right.
So you can be a leader, you can bring some messages which can be supported, but let it be like quite networking, quite free, mm-hmm. and don't afraid of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that of course the readiness of our president Zelensky, from the skills point of view, yes, he's professional speaker, he is professional actor, and his readiness to speak openly, to speak with emotions,
mm-hmm.
Which was like from all other leaders, political leaders of other countries, it's all bring very good story on the table. And the very important also was that speaking to each other nation, Our president and our officials and our people used a lot of historical backgrounds trying to explain this situation, yes, because we're living here and most of the Europe, for example, was taken that this is traditional Russian territory.
Right.
And if they didn't believe us within the 30 years that we're independent nations, why they should be to do it now? And I think that our bravery plus reference to their historical events, explaining some things in very understandable for them terms, it also helped a lot. I think that the combination of all these efforts gave a very good result, but of course we need to get deeper maybe in this period, and I think that a lot of academics will go deeper and probably will discover a lot of many other things.
Yeah, no, and I think that brings me to another question that, you know, came to mind earlier when you were speaking with the group, and it's, what would you say or how has the concept of strategic communication for you evolved, or has it been solidified or even changed as a result of, you know, the last 6 months?
We put some efforts in Ukraine, we as a government, we as the civil society, in developing the communication skills, because actually the communication is one of the management tools for government also, yes, and traditionally it was not always taken like this, but there were a lot of efforts trying to establish the system inside the government, trying to activate the public-private partnership in many cases, and I think it worked. I mean, that there were a lot of knowledge which were put inside the system and which became activated in the situation of threat. And so the many people already understand the importance of communication. And also because the whole society was activated to support and to fight, among those who joined the army, for example, or joined the territorial defense, there were a lot of public figures, influencers, who started to communicate the story from their own to their supporters, and that was very big power when the people started to support their people they trust or leaders they trust, and these leaders also started to communicate from the ground and everything was going on, and that created a huge network. And the plus of this network also that you cannot deactivate it. I mean, if you don't have a one leader, you cannot deactivate the network. And that was a huge plus because everyone was like a small part of this communication network. And of course, this is like a values-based communication. That's why it was so important. So I think that in this situation, everything like a, just like a mixed up and very good mix.
Was there one thing that maybe you underestimated that showed to be very useful or very powerful for you?
We spoke about the channels, maybe the whole picture of the media coverage here changed. So with the on the first days the television disappeared, and a lot of channels in social channels like a Telegram channels appeared, and most of them were supported by the volunteers, by usual people, and they were collecting the news all over and they were spreading the news and they were translating in different languages immediately. So that became some kind of a very useful channels for communications, and they were heavily used. Until now they are heavily used with million subscribers, so it's some kind of use of digital media of contemporary approach to comms. At the same time, the fact that the governmental digital channels still are working and they are operating well and they are delivering message and they are collecting information and they are supporting people with their, all the registrations and everything, it also played well because it gives you an easy possibility how you can deliver the information that you are suffered from the occupation, that your relatives disappeared or your house was destroyed or you're looking for someone. So all these channels, digital channels, they continue to work, and that's one of very interesting lessons learned, because most of experts, they were afraid that we will lose the mobile connection, digital, and the electricity, actually,
yeah.
till now, and bank system. So it was like a three, like a, some kind of three elephants which were holding everything. But we, our bank system is operating well. Electricity is operating well, and we still have all the digital services operating, including UID in the phone. So that's some kind of lessons learned which should be taken from this situation to understand how we did it and how we were so successful with it.
What do you think made you particularly successful?
Somehow this is the distribution of the decision-making points or like a service points, yes. Because this is not like in Russia when you attack one central point and you got all of this. Plus, I would say that support of many citizens, usual citizens who gave their knowledge and skills to support the systems also. Because from the very beginning, all the IT, and Ukraine is very well known for IT component, we have a lot of IT specialists here working for different companies. So all this IT power, they started to do something to assist, to support, to produce the products, to like counter cyber attacks. And that was like accumulation of this, like a network of supporters, of citizens ready to protect in different dimensions. Ukraine, it played well.
Yeah. And finally, what would you say is the current message that you're putting outside there, especially to external partners in Europe and even in Africa? What is the message at this point in time?
Ukraine is strong. It will win. We are already winning. Russia will collapse. And that means that, first of all, the voice of Ukraine and the voice of countries which were never been playing some kind of substantial role in international politics, it's rising up. And I think that now the system of like international order should be rethinked. And such countries as Ukraine, they should have more place in decision making. And Ukraine obviously became some kind of very bright nation. And that's very, you feel very bright to be a Ukrainian. And this is which cannot be changed. Yeah. So we feel ourselves like a big nation. We are a big nation.
Indeed. Alina, thank you so, so much for the time. This has been a pleasure.
Thank you.
That brings us to the end of today's show. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did putting it together. I love, love learning new things. Hey, if you enjoyed this chat, you definitely enjoy others that came before it. Check out previous episodes on whichever platform you're tuned into now, or visit our website www.thebrenthurstfoundation.org for other episodes. As always, thank you so much for listening. And if I could make one last ask of you, please do share this with others. Again, you're listening to Marie Noel on the Brenthurst Foundation podcast, and it's been a pleasure sharing this time with you. Until next week, stay well.